Plus 49.
Buenas tardes and bienvenidos to another episode of Plus 49. My name is Sigrid Arteaga and I'm thrilled that you're here with us for another episode. Tonight we have an exciting show lineup. We'll dive into the latest news. A lot of things are happening here in Germany and of course worldwide, but let's talk first from the search and legal actions over citizenship delays to the high-stakes coalition talks in Germany. Then we'll have to explore what is a coalition government and why it is such a defining feature of German politics. Also, we have an interesting interview with the dear Shaili. We're gonna have some Bollywood vibes with us. Without much further, let's start today's episode. Let's dive right into the latest news updates. In 2024, the number of Berlin residents resorting to legal actions over citizenship delays surged dramatically. Recent data shows that 1,662 individuals filed inactivity lawsuits against German immigration authorities, an increase of 313% from the 402 complaints last year. This lawsuit, known as Untätigkeitsklagen, allows applicants who haven't received a decision within 3 months to challenge the system. Chronic understaffing and an influx of naturalization requests have led to backlogs of around 40,000 applications. Although the newly centralized processing center has boosted numbers with 21,802 applications approved last year, many older applicants were forced to resubmit online, incurring additional fees. Critics warn that such delays contribute to a massive democratic deficit. In a city where nearly a quarter of 3.8 million residents aren't German citizens. Now, turning to the political arena. Coalition talks are heating up after the union's win in the 2025 Bundestag election. The union is currently in exploratory discussions with the SPD for a possible black-red coalition. Both parties have already agreed to reform the debt brake to finance two major financial packages, one for expanding defense and another for critical infrastructure investments. Under immense time pressure, union leader Friedrich Merz has proposed leveraging the old Bundestag's two-thirds majority to push these measures through. Merz declared that whatever it takes is necessary amid escalating global threats. He stresses that this rapid negotiation process is not only about ensuring domestic stability, but also sending a strong signal ahead of key international summits. These talks, however, remain in their early stages. As the pressure mounts, the outcome is far from certain. That's your roundup for tonight. Stay tuned as we continue to follow the stories and bring you updates in our next episode. In the news segment, we touch on coalition. Now, let's take a deeper look at why there's such a defining feature of German politics. Unlike in some other countries, where a single party can govern alone, Germany almost always has coalition governments. But why? Germany's electoral system combines proportional representation and direct mandates, making it rare for a single party to win an outright majority in the Bundestag, the German federal parliament. This system is designed to ensure that politic representations more closely reflect the diversity of opinions in the electorate. As a result, parties must form coalitions, which are temporary alliances designed to secure a stable government. These agreements typically last for one period, or 4 years, and require significant compromise, meaning no party can fully implement its own program. In a coalition, the larger parties often must accommodate the policy priorities of their small partners, which can make for complex negotiation processes. The type of coalition that emerged depends on the balance of power in the Bundestag and the ideology proximity of the parties involved. Over the years, different coalition types have emerged, often named after color schemes. One of the most well-known formations is the Grand Coalition, also known as GroKo, between the CDU, CSU, and SPD. Angela Merkel led three grand coalitions, GroKos, and given the currently political landscape, another grand coalition seems likely in this new period. Another possibility for the current landscape is Kenya, which would be red, black, and green. After an election, the strongest party typically takes the lead in negotiations. High-ranking party members, including party chairs, ministers, and state premiers, meet to draft a coalition agreement, which outlines policies and ministerial positions. This agreement must be approved by party leadership, parliamentary factions, or even party members before the government is finalized. Since 1961, coalition agreements have become standard at the federal level, often taking weeks or even months to negotiate. These agreements are not legally binding, but serve as a political guideline. Disputes between coalition partners are settled in a coalition committee, which ensures smooth cooperation. Once a coalition agreement is reached, the party moves to form the government. The chancellor, who is the head of the government, is selected by the Bundestag. The largest party in the coalition typically nominates a candidate for chancellor, in this case, Friedrich Merz. The coalition partners then negotiate who will fill other key positions, such as ministers, with a final decision confirmed by the Bundestag. This process involves consultations and approval within the coalitions, and a lot of stress. Today for our interview, I'm feeling I need to dance because the person that I'm going to present is someone who not only knows how to dance, but knows how to dance in a very specific way. And that's Bollywood dancing, if I'm saying that correctly. But for that, we have Shaili with us. And welcome, Shaili.
Thank you, Sigrid. Thank you for the warm welcome. And I loved how you just introduced Bollywood dance. It is a very special kind of dance. And it's a very dance which is filled with expressions and emotions. So, yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here today.
And I think since we're in Germany and emotions is not precisely, and movements, it's not precisely something that you can see, especially in winter, I think your workshops give you back that energy and give everybody that energy to just break through the winter and start moving and be a little bit more, I guess, happy.
Yeah, I think like I see my workshops especially do very well in the winter. I've been doing this now for almost 4 years in Berlin, and knowing the winter, I see a surge in the how it sells out, and you know, people interested in the workshops definitely much more in the winter, because Bollywood is a very special type of dance. I mean because it's very high energy dance. Even the songs are very energy boosting and mood boosting, you know, the dance. So I think it's perfect activity to do in the cold gray winter of Berlin. So highly recommend. And you don't even need to be a great dancer or a professional dancer to learn Bollywood. I think everybody can and should learn Bollywood just for their own better mental health and to feel happier and to increase the endorphins and all the happy hormones. So I think Bollywood is a great dance for that. So yeah,
I think you pointed out something very important here. You don't need to be professional. You don't need to know a lot. You just need to go and dance.
Yeah, I think that's been my philosophy. I especially cater to beginners because having grown up as a dancer myself and having attended a lot of dance classes, And I used to find some dance classes very intimidating, you know, especially when I was learning a new form of dance. And it would always somehow, unfortunately, cater to people who already knew the dance, you know, and who were already good, you know. So this is the philosophy with which I started my brand, Smells Like Bali Spirit, and wanted to cater to people who just wanted to dance for the joy of it, you know, not to perform, not to show anyone that they are great dancers, and just to do a dance for themselves, you know, just for the joy of dancing. And I think that's the philosophy, and that's why I cater especially to beginners. Especially there are not many classes in Bali which cater especially to beginners, because it's harder to teach beginners also, you know. You have to really tone down things, you have to tone down choreographies. But I think that's why I think I attract that kind of crowd who are like, you know, who have been intimidated previously in previous dance classes, and they just want to come have fun. And even if it's just, they just want to work out and move their bodies for 1 hour or 2 hours. So that's what, you know, is the philosophy behind this. So I very strongly believe that, you know, it's not about really dance, invariably seen as something to show others, but I really believe it's something to do for yourself.
We're back with Shaili. And Shaili, you've been around 4 years in Germany?
Almost 6 years now, actually, yeah.
How did this happen?
Yeah, how did I move? So I'm basically from India, from the western part of India. And I'm married, and my husband and I had moved to the US to pursue our master's. And post that, we didn't get our visa, unfortunately, because getting US visas can be a struggle. So we didn't get our work visas. And my husband's company had the option of moving to Europe. And trust me, I hadn't even set foot in Europe before that in my life. I was already like 31 and I'd never traveled to Europe. So I was very excited about the opportunity of living in Europe. You know, I was like, oh, you know, let's do this. So his company had an office in Berlin, and I had never traveled to Europe or Berlin before. But I said, yes, we are doing this, you know. And then we decided to come here, and we just came here with all our bags and, you know, came here to just move in without even seeing the city even before, you know. I'd never seen the city or never experienced but I read a lot of blogs, and I found the city to be extremely creative. And since I'm also a creative person, I'm like, oh, this seems to be a very cool city, and there are a lot of creative people around, like musicians, photographers, dancers, and it seems like it might be a good fit. And it's also very international, so I like diversity, I like interacting with people from different cultures, so this was also important for me. So yeah, we took this leap of faith, and we really loved Berlin. We also had the opportunity to go back to the US after a year, but we decided to stay here and you know, be in Berlin, and this is home now for us, you know. So yeah,
you came into Berlin like going into cold water.
Really, exactly. I had no clue what the city was or what the people were and what it was. Yeah, it was, now when I think of it, it's scary that how could I do something like that without even, you know, we should have at least like visited the city once, you know, before going here. But I guess whatever happens, happens for the best. So yeah.
Do you remember those first moments when you arrived in the city where you started understanding this cultural shock, where you said like, oh, this is the way that they do it here?
Yeah, a lot of things were cultural shock, you know, especially like food. So India is like, we are very into food. I'm sure like being from Mexico, you would understand this, you know, this food is so important. And, you know, how the way of eating, how Germans eat, you know, this whole thing about cold food. And in India, we have warm food all 3 times a day. It's all about, I don't attest to it, but it's all about cooking food, you know, all the time. And then here I come and I'm like, people are just eating bread and cheese for dinner. And I'm like, sorry, that's not a meal for me. I need proper food, you know, proper, what is proper to me. But now I get it. At that time, it was like, oh my God, I just don't understand at all.
I think it's a common knowledge that, well, for all internationals, it is more or less the same thing. We had someone who already asked, like, what's Abendbrot? What's this piece of bread with just like something cold on it? But at least you have very good Indian restaurants in Berlin, right?
Yeah, there are quite a few good ones now. I think a lot of them have popped up in the last 2 years. Even more have popped up. So I think there's some good Indian food now in Berlin. So I'm not complaining. Yeah,
that is great. I'm still looking for the best Mexican, but that comes into another episode.
I can understand. Yeah.
Shali, I need to picture myself in your workshop, and especially for those who are listening, because as you said, like, every culture has a different type of music and a way of movement. I know, as someone who comes from a Latin American country, that we move the hips a lot. And when we talk with Germans or we try to teach Germans how to move, we just feel it. Like, I've never in my life had classes, but I know, like, 1, 2, 3,
yeah.
Yeah. Just like move your hips all the time. For those of you who are listening, of course, I'm dancing inside of my closet in Mexico, because at the moment I'm in Mexico. But for me, it's always about, most of the time, the hips. But I believe, if I'm correct, for you, it's basically all the body, right?
We do use all the body, but we also use the hips a lot. It's not in the same way. I do Latin American dances as well. I love salsa, by the way. Yeah, but we don't move it in the same way as you do, but we have a different way of moving. But we also move our hips a lot, actually, even in Bollywood. Yeah.
One time I learned that, or this is more or less probably the idea that everybody has about how Indian music goes, that you move your shoulders up and down and like kind of go from one side of to the other side. Is that something typical, or is it just, you know, the stereotype?
No, it is. It's very typical. It's a very famous move, especially if you're attending an Indian wedding. This is something you will definitely do, you know, while, so we have a ritual or a custom when the groom is going towards the bride, you know, is going to marry the bride, they walk on a road, you know, so they, if possible, they even get a horse and they are on the horse and they, yeah, we're just too, we're too dramatic, but they walk and then people alongside that are dancing with the groom, right? Because they're going to go get this guy married to the bride. So everybody dancing. So when that happens, this is a very common move to do, this shoulder move. And there are some very easy moves that you can learn for an Indian wedding. You can use it everywhere. You know, you can use it through the wedding. So, yeah.
You said before that while you grew up, while you were growing up, it was either cricket or movies.
Yeah.
Is also dancing part of a everyday life in India?
Actually, it is like more, you would find like most children are into, especially I think girls, I think it's more typical of girls, especially girls. Like when I was growing up I didn't know anybody who didn't like to dance, you know, even if they were bad at it, you know, it didn't matter if you were good or bad at it. You would just dance, because we saw a lot of movies and we would have our favorite, you know, actors and actresses, and we would want to copy the dance moves they did, you know. So it was like a big part of our life, and almost everybody was into, yeah, I think it's a big part of our culture, because we dance a lot on our festivals also. We, as you might know, we celebrate a lot of festivals in India, and dancing in those festivals is part of the culture. It's part of the festival culture, you know, so for that also you have to dance. We dance in our weddings. So dance is a big part, is a big fabric of the, you know, culture itself, I think, in India.
I'm going to ask Marlene to just join in real quick, because as you know, Marlene, our dearest producer, she's a German. And sometimes I like to ask her, so what is your intake as a German about dancing? Because of course, Berlin is techno. And to be honest, I still don't understand what techno is, because it's just like up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
But you grew up here in Germany. Is there any specific thing that you would say, oh yes, I love to dance, or we love to dance? Or,
so I have to say for myself, no, I'm not a dancer at all, actually. And I think it's not that common in Germany. But one thing that is usually common is that in school, at some point you do a Tanzschule, where you learn classic dances. And then there's always an Abschlussball, where you go with a partner and everything, you dress up. But I didn't do it because it was during Corona, so I didn't do one. But that's, I think, common. But other than that, not really. I mean, it's not in our daily routine. We're not really confronted with it. Of course, we dance and we have dance schools, but it's not that common in our daily practices, I would say. And for myself, neither. And I also don't understand techno dancing. I think it's just you move to the beat. That's what they always say. And the moves are just do what you feel somehow. But I don't know.
Do you think that dancing in Germany has changed a little bit? I mean, you're Gen Z and you're definitely younger, but I'm talking a little bit younger-ers. Because of Instagram, that people are maybe just trying to make more Instagram feeds or TikTok or Snapchats or whatever it is for 13, 14 years. Because I see a lot of them dancing in front of a camera. Is this something that you have seen in Germany a little bit more? Like maybe this generation might be more into dancing, or is it just because of the hype of, yeah, making a video?
I think it's more because of the hype of the video, and it's mostly short time frames. So it's only a dance. It is a choreography, but only for like a minute max, I would say. And you learn this dance and that's it. So I don't think there is much more to it.
Well, this is one of the reasons why we do this show, because at the end of the day, talking about all this, it's one topic. It's dancing. It's actually as ancient as human beings, but every culture does it in a very different way. And we're right now here in Germany, and of course me with my salsa, and Marlene with the techno, even though she doesn't understand techno, and Shailene, of course, with Bollywood. And it was so great to hear you and hear what you do. And trust me, we're going to do that workshop.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to welcoming you there. Yeah, it's going to be fun. I guarantee fun, usually. that's my tagline. Fun guaranteed.
And just moving the body, and especially in winter or when you're already don't want to see any more gray, I think it's the best way to get a little bit more of endorphins out and just laugh about yourself, even if it doesn't come out the way you think you're looking like.
Exactly. It's always about you can't be so serious with yourself also, right? Like you got to laugh at yourself sometimes. So yeah, it works.
Yeah.
It definitely works.
We're back with our last segment with Chaili, and I would love to know a little bit more about Bollywood dance or in general. I think after the huge success that the film and industry is having in India, suddenly Bollywood is a thing. And people are still trying to understand how you move, what is it? So take us there. Take us into one of your workshops and what are the things that we might start to move?
Yeah, just for context, you know, because Bollywood is really important for people, you know, for us growing up, like, because we don't have a lot of things in India when growing up. At least when I was growing up, it was all about cricket or it was movies, you know, watching movies, cricket or Bollywood dance. So Bollywood is like so ingrained in me that, you know, I think I will be dancing when I'm 60 years old also, you know. So coming to the dance itself, it's a very different form of dance compared to a contemporary or a ballet or something like that, right? We dance on different songs, and each song, the musicality can be very different. It can be a classical based song, like Indian classical based song, or in the same song we can have Western hip hop or contemporary beats in the same song, and we choreograph movements to each individual song. So it's a very choreography based dance, I would say, which is very different from a lot of different forms of dance. How you learn Bollywood is like you just pick up a song, learn a choreography to the song, and that's how you learn Bollywood. There's not a set standard of things where you start like, oh, first you learn these five movements and then you learn these other set of five movements. And there are different genres. Like I said, you can learn hip-hop style Bollywood. You can learn a classical style Bollywood. There's also jazz-based songs that we combine. So it's very interesting. So you will have a jazz movement and then I can do an Indian movement with that, Indian folk. Or you can have a folk-based song. Like we have a very strong base of folk songs also from India and folk dances, which are also very popular. So we combine those moments also in these songs. So it's literally a concoction of a lot of moments, you know, like each choreography is. So I would say that's why it makes it a little bit more challenging to learn, because it's a choreography, right? Because in a choreography, it's just not the movement, it's also a brain exercise. This is what I tell my students, like, because you have to remember the what movement comes after every movement, and everything is learnt by your body, right? There's no paper and pen that you can note down moments, like that doesn't happen in dance, right? So it's all your body remembering the moment and remembering the choreography. So I always say like Bollywood is a great way, it's a great brain exercise also to learn, because you learn choreographies. Of course, you learn choreographies in other dances as well, but Bollywood even more so, that's the way to learn it. Basically, this is kind of the structure of Bollywood. We pick songs and we dance to it, and there can be different levels again to it also. You can have a beginner level choreography, you can have an intermediate, or you can have a very advanced choreography with very advanced movements. And some Bollywood songs, this is the feedback that I've gotten from students, that can be really fast, because again, this is not something common in other forms of dance. The music is like contemporary music is a little slower, even ballet is a little slower, jazz is slower, but Bollywood beats can be really fast, you know. So some movements you have to do it very high energy and very fast, which some people may not like it or some people love it, you know. So you kind of, there are only two ways about it. You kind of love it or you kind of hate it. So that's something very interesting about Bollywood music and Indian music and Indian dance.
We should definitely try it out. And before we leave you, where can we find you? How can we find you? When are the workshops?
So generally nowadays, I do these workshops once or twice a month. The best way I think to find me is on Instagram. That's my platform and that's what I use it. So the Instagram handle is Smells Like Bolly Spirit. It's a play on the song. I love Smells Like Teen Spirit, the song, Nirvana song. So it's a play on that. So it Smells Like Bolly Spirit. So just feel free to DM me on Instagram find me on Instagram. And you can also find me on Google Maps with the same name, and my number is there as well on the Google Maps page. So feel free, if you want to just say hi.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Aline. Thank you for being today in the podcast with us. And of course, we hope to see you very soon and be part of your workshop.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, Sigrid, and good luck for your show also going forward.
Plus 49, Ask a German.
I've always wondered, you know, I find it very hard to make friends with Germans, you know, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? You know, like, I'm not that bad a person, you know. And for example, in my culture in India, like, even if you know somebody a little bit, you would just invite them to your house, you know, for a meal or something. It's just something we do, you know. But I feel like, I might be wrong, I feel like it's very hard to get an invitation to a German's house, you know. Like, so I want to know, how do I get an invitation to a German person's house? How do I be that friendly with them or make friends good enough so that they find me good enough to invite them to their house, you know? So that's always troubled me a lot, you know?
I think that's a question a lot of experts have been wondering about. And first of all, let me reassure you, it's not you. Germans generally don't invite people into their homes as casually or quickly as in some other cultures. And this has nothing to do with you personally. I, as a German, experienced this too. Instead, it's rooted in how Germans view their homes. For many, home is a deeply personal retreat, a sanctuary somewhat, where they relax, unwind, and keep their private lives separate from the outside world. Inviting someone over is not just about hospitality, it's about letting someone into that very private space. Unlike in cultures where it's common to spontaneously invite acquaintances for a meal or a cup of tea, social interactions in Germany are usually structured and planned in advance. Meeting up at a cafe, a restaurant, or an event is the preferred way to spend time together. Home invitations tend to be reserved for family or long-term friendships. But I think there's also a historical factor at play. In East Germany, during the Cold War, surveillance and mistrust were part of everyday life, making privacy a highly valued concept. Even today, things like Datenschutz or data protection is taken very seriously, and many Germans apply a similar approach to their personal lives. They like to keep a clear distinctions between their public and private spheres. Another aspect is that many Germans feel pressure to ensure their home is perfectly tidy before hosting guests. While in some cultures, hosting someone spontaneously is no big deal, in Germany, an invitation usually means preparing extensively, meaning cleaning, organizing, and maybe even planning a meal. This added effort makes people more reluctant to invite someone unless they feel completely comfortable. So, how do you get that invitation? I would say the key here is patience and consistency. Friendships in Germany tend to take longer to develop, but once formed, they are deep and long-lasting. Keep meeting in public places, show genuine interest, and over time, as trust grows, the invitation will likely come naturally. Also, small cultural gestures help. If you do get invited, bring a small gift like flowers, wine, or chocolate, and always respect their planning habits by arriving on time. So, to answer your question, I think some Germans might be reluctant at first to invite you over into their house, as they see it as their individual sanctuary, a space that reflects their personal identity and values. This reluctance is not necessarily a reflection of their feelings towards you, don't worry. Rather, it stems from a cultural emphasis on privacy and the significance of home as a personal retreat.
That is a wrap-up for today's episode here at Plus 49. Marlene, our dearest producer, thank you so much for being here today. She and I will at some point go to a workshop and try our best Bollywood moves. Let's see how that works. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us. And we hope you actually enjoy last week's International Women's Day. It was a very interesting program and we really enjoyed doing it. If you haven't heard it, go to our webpage www.plus49.de. You can find there all our latest podcasts and of course this very one, the International Women's Day special. It was a pleasure to be once again with you here and we hope that we can be part of your day next week at the same time. Hasta la próxima.